Happy New Year and welcome to YA Book Jam, the monthly book club podcast with your hosts, JL Blakely,
Arden Jones,
and Shirley Mack.
So I know I teased my January choice as Dark Academia, but as we read the book, we decided it was a bit too dark for January, which is already a bleak month to many. Not to me though, because it's my birthday month. In fact, this is airing on my birthday.
Woohoo!
So my present to all of you was to revisit that choice later and instead to go a little bit more lighthearted. The dark comedy, How to Survive a Horror Movie by Scarlett Dunmore, published by Little Tiger Books in 2024. We love a thriller, we love a horror, we love a comedy, but what we don't love is spoilers. So if you haven't read this book, push pause, go grab yourself a copy, give it a read before you listen so we don't spoil it for you. Saying all that, let's read the blurb. Horror enthusiast Charlie is determined to keep a low profile when she is enrolled at a girls' boarding school on a remote island. That is, until someone starts killing off her senior class. From a masked figure prowling the grounds to severed heads in fridges, Charlie has found herself at the heart of a horror movie. And it only gets worse. She now is seeing ghosts of her classmates. Haunted by her peers, literally, and with everyone beginning to suspect her, Charlie has to do something. She and her best friend Olive are the only ones who understand the rules of horror. They know never split up or investigate strange noises in the dark, so it's up to them to solve the murders before graduation. Charlie just needs those pesky ghosts to shut up and give her a hand. So we can already tell that this is going to be a fun read. The blurb had me hooked, and I just love that each chapter title was another horror movie rule that gave you a clue about what was going to happen in that chapter. And I also think the front cover is great with the popcorn and blood splatter all over it. I really love the font as well. Front covers can be really hard to get right. So what did you think of this one and the blurb? Were you excited to read the book?
Okay, so I'm just going to start off here by just saying, as it's going to go out on your birthday, happy birthday, Jess!
Happy birthday!
Anyway, back to the book now. So I loved this cover so much. I think like the black, the popcorn and the blood spatter, you're just... really, like, you just know straight away this is just going to be a fun and horrific book altogether. I think it worked so well, and it just made me feel like I could be watching or slash reading a horror film, and this was exactly that, and I was so excited to read it. And I love reading horror. I don't like reading gore. I'm not into anything like that or watching anything like that, but I love reading Stephen King books. My favourite ones being Rose Meadow and The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. So I'd suggest reading those if you haven't. They are just brilliant. I was a teenager in the 90s. I watched Scream when it first came out, and I loved the Halloween franchise. I was growing up. I did watch it too young, and I'm a bit of a wimp now, so you probably wouldn't catch me watching many horrors now, but I loved them growing up, and I love reading ones. So this was so good to get my teeth or my fangs into. And you're right, those chapter headings with the rules were just so good. I loved that bit. I couldn't wait to like get through to the next chapter so I could find out what the next rule was. I could have looked at the contents, but I didn't. I was just like, what's the next bit going to be? Because I just think it was so fun.
I had actually saw this book several times coming up, and I'd kind of earmarked it as one to read because I loved the cover. And I checked out the blurb on the back as well, and I was like, yeah, this looks absolutely brilliant. So when Little Tiger had offered to send a copy of the book, I was like, yeah, I definitely want to get on that horror train. And I am so weird with horror because I like horror comedy, but I don't do like really, really dark horror. But I love your like Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer. And I do like Halloween. I don't mind watching that as long as my husband is there beside me, because still gets quite scared of Michael Myers.
So scared.
I just try to remember that his mask is William Shatner's face inside out.
What?
I don't know if you guys knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's how they modelled Michael Myers' mask. So sometimes when I'm too scared, I think about that, because it kind of makes it a little bit less scary for me. It takes the scare out of it. Yeah, when I got the book through, I was like, oh, so pretty. And I thought it was a perfect horror cover because it's obviously got the popcorn that you would go to see a movie with, so it was very good, and the blood spatter was excellent. And I really particularly loved the chapter headings, and it was just so kind of 90s-tastic. I was also a teenager in the 90s, and that's when I first got into my slasher movies, and I love them. So when I read this, it was around Halloween, which was perfect timing. And yeah, it was just exactly what it said on the tin and what I was needing at that moment to read. So yeah, perfection.
Yeah, I love that. I've not read either of those books, Arden, so I'm going to write that down to read those.
Yes.
I haven't read those.
Me too, because I've never read either of those either. Yeah.
Oh, I'd say Rose Meadow might be a bit too dark for you, Shelley. I'm putting it out there
some
already.
Stephen King's, I can't read some Stephen King's. You're absolutely right. So if it's too dark, please warn me. But I really want to read the Tom Gordon one because I've got that marked on my favourites on Amazon. So I'm going to definitely read that.
Yeah, no, I love the sound of those. And yeah, again, just to sort of echo what you said, Shelley, just to thank Little Tiger Books for sending us this. It was definitely one that I was excited to see come through the post.
Thank you. So
right at the start of chapter one, we are introduced to the L's, Gabrielle, Annabelle and Rochelle. They're the popular girls at Harrogate, which is an elite girls boarding school, and we also meet our protagonist Charlie and her boy crazy roommate Olive. They're kind of the other end of the popular spectrum in their leggings and vintage horror movie t-shirts, but they're roommates made in heaven, sharing a love for classic horror movies, watched on their slasher Saturdays, and a joint sort of mocking of the L's and their ridiculous popularity. We also find out in chapter one that they are not alone on their remote island. There's also a boys' boarding school, which is delightfully convenient for a YA book. What could possibly go wrong? So what did you make of our excitement-seeking protagonist and her best friend?
Well, I loved their sort of dynamic together, the two best friends, and I actually really liked all the references to all the horror movies. I love loads of pop culture references in my book, and I know that sometimes people can be think it's a bit too much and things like that, but for me it's like, I can't get enough of that. And like, I actually remember you saying this to me before, Jess, when you were editing my book, that I had put a Gilmore Girls reference in, and she was like, it's like you've just put this in just so you can mention it. And it's like, I did. That's what I did. But I think obviously it was very relevant because it was all horror, pop culture references. It was in this book. So I love that side of it. And it kind of reminded me of films as well that I hadn't seen for ages, and I was like, oh, I need to go back and watch that again. So it was good. Yeah. It was jogging my memory for those sort of things. So I loved their dynamic and their sort of geekiness, because that was totally me at school. So I related to that.
Yeah.
But I really liked the intrigue around Charlie as well, because we knew that she obviously had a darker past, but at this point we didn't know what that entailed, but obviously we knew it would come out at some point. So I felt as if it really sort of set the tone really well, and I was really excited to see what was coming next. But I just really enjoyed how it all kicked off, and just their relationship was really good. Yeah, I liked how it started.
Yeah, me too. I love Charlie's character, and what I really loved about her, and well, actually just about her setup really, was all those early hints that she hadn't really been a good girl before, that she's gone there to get away from something. I think it was a really good way to get to know her, with all those little bits of foreshadowing, because we're going to then find out what she did last summer. There's one for you, Shelley.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, I'm the worst.
That's exactly the kind of joke I appreciate. Thank you.
I didn't really get that she was an excitement-seeking character. I felt like she was hiding away watching scary movies with her friend, which to me is like super cool. Mm. But not someone that's like looking for a thrill. And I loved her and Olive's friendship as well. They were like two peas in a scary pod, and and the way they spoke in movie trivia, they was just like the perfect duo. But unlike you, Shelley, I did feel like there was just a little bit too many horror references, and they did begin to grate on me a little. Sometimes I'd be like, oh, another one. And although I knew everyone and I knew them all, and I've done this myself, whether it's to do with music or whether it's like a film or a TV show that we've watched, I also can do this, but I just felt like it was a few too many. I would have liked just a little bit less, but I did really like that part of it, and I thought it was really fun. So yeah, they were a brilliant pairing, and really too similar to me to be true. So I knew there was something that was going to shake that up. So I had a little suspicion at this point, and was I wrong? We'll find out later. But I want to mention how much I loved Scarlett's writing. I feel like it's so suited for horror. Like, the way she writes really sets the tone for the whole story. And I was hooked from the start. I read it in 2 days. Yeah. And it doesn't happen often for me. And maybe it's just horror. I seem to like flick through horror really quickly. Maybe I just need to get it over and done with.
You're too scared.
I'm too scared, yeah. I need to get to the end, so I'm happy again. Everyone lives happily ever after, apart from the people that have died, obviously. The way she wrote things just really stood out to me. It was like she wrote with like a poetic horror kind of way. So there's this one line, it was quite early on, and I really loved it. And I was like, okay, this is going to be great. So here goes. It was an unsettling wind, howling and moaning like voices calling out to us. It pushed the tips of the branches against the windows so that they scratched like claws trying to get in.
Beautiful.
I was just like, yeah, this is going to be amazing.
I tabbed that line as well.
Oh, did you? It's so good. I was just like, yeah, that's for horror. It's just
perfect. I think we have our quote for marketing this book. That's the perfect quote for sure. That's a perfect quote.
Yeah, and I love that, like, it didn't read, like, cause sometimes the books that have these beautiful quotes that we love and we kind of make a note of, like, sometimes they can be quite a lot to wrap your head around while you're reading them, but this book felt very fast-paced, very commercial, very easy to read, but then you still had that beautiful prose in it that didn't seem to slow you down. It was just really well balanced, I thought. Oh, there's so many things you both said that I want to jump in and say stuff. First of all, like, how good a film is I Know What You Did Last Summer? Like, it's like one of my all-time favorites.
Yes.
But yeah, I have to say, this is going to shock Shelley.
Huh?
I did not mind all the references in this book because I felt like that was the whole point of the book, was like how to survive a horror film. So I felt like this book lended itself. And I usually am someone who's like...
It was not pointless for no reason at all. Yes, I get it.
Well, I'm usually someone who like... I don't mind one pop culture reference or two. You can maybe get away with three if they're spread out. But I'm someone who's like, if it's loads, I'm like, oh, right, enough's enough. But with this book, I felt like it worked. So I'm kind of in between the two of you, but I did feel like it was okay for this book. It didn't annoy me. But I loved Charlie and Olive's dynamic, like you said, Shelley. And I thought they were really believable friends. So I was different to you, Arden. Like, I thought... It was so good that Charlie had someone at school that got her. I was so relieved for her at that moment to start with. And I feel like every protagonist needs a trusty sidekick. And I felt like she was the perfect sidekick for her. And I was just glad she had her. I was like, if they're at the school and she obviously has this sort of past she's wanting to get away from, the fact that she had found someone, even though they're kind of still sort of outcasts, it just made me really happy at this point. So I love they had their slasher Saturdays and that she just kind of found her person. But as the story develops, the tensions rise with an oncoming storm threatening their remote life and an internal storm with Charlie every time she sees her crush, Saoirse Quinn, the cute redhead. And we learn that there's much more to Charlie as she confesses to us readers that she came to the school to run away from her past life, kind of as we've mentioned, on the mainland, where she was known as Charlotte Ryan, adding more intrigue to our main character. During Charlie and Olive's slasher Saturday, the storm battles on and Charlie sees the first sight of a mysterious shadow that will haunt her throughout this story. And then just as things are starting to really get spooky, Charlie discovers a dead body on the bottom of the cliffs during the storm curfew. And this is where I feel like she is kind of a bit adventure seeking because she's doing really dangerous things and she seems like okay with that. I was like, what are you doing? I was like, you know the rules, don't go out during a storm. What are you doing this early in the book? But she discovers Hannah Manning's body. And did she jump or was she pushed? Everyone is brushing Hannah's death off as a suicide apart from our main character. And it feels like straight after Hannah, we then have Sarah Keenan, who is found dead. And there's this shifty Mr. Gillies, the woodwork teacher, who isn't far away from the body. It's, of course, brushed off as another tragic accident. And we know that these are not accidents at all, but murder. Were you starting to compile a list of suspects at this point?
Yes. But again, it wasn't a list. I had two people on this list. So is that a list? Can you call that a list? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I had a list of two people. Before I go into that, I just have to mention here, at that point with the crab coming out of Hannah's mouth at the bottom of the cliff, it actually made me gag. I thought it was such a brilliant touch to add to like this freakiness of this non-accident slash murder, sorry. I don't know.
It made me really hungry for crab. Yeah.
It didn't make me hungry.
I mean, I don't like crabs anyway, like to eat. And I'm just like, yeah, no, that's...
I was like, stuffed crab.
But I just thought that was so good. But yeah, back to the suspects. I was like, it's obviously not Mr. Gillies at all. It's too obvious. I've watched Scream enough times because of this. And the fact that in real life, the majority of people who are murdered are killed by someone they know. I'm weighing this all up in my head, and I knew it was not going to be one of the adults. And the killer or killers that I was guessing at the time was going to be someone our protagonist had relations with. So, of course, I was expecting Olive. And then we had the love interest. And I'm like, well, okay, I'm thinking love interest, which is Saoirse. And with the plot twist in Scream that there wasn't just one but two, I was like, okay, I already know who it's going to be. And I suspected Olive and Saoirse at this point.
Oh, wow, that is amazing. I think, sometimes when I've been reading a lot of murder mysteries and whodunits this last year, and sometimes for me, I kind of don't want to guess, so I just want to read and enjoy. Yeah. So for me, I was like, I don't really want to guess this too much. I'm just going to keep reading and enjoy what I'm reading, and maybe things will come to me later on in the book when it's all about to come to, the book climax where we find out where everything happens. So for me, I wasn't really overly thinking at this point. What I do know is I did not want it to be Olive, because I knew that there was going to be something really dark from Charlie's past that would get revealed, and I really wanted her to have somebody in her corner. And I also didn't want it to be Saoirse, because I thought, well, she's obviously had a hard time. She could start her life over. So I guess I just didn't want to accept that maybe it could be either of those two. So I just kept reading at this point. And yeah, I was more just in it for enjoyment.
I'm like, it's a horror. It's not just a murder mystery, we're in a horror film.
I know, true. But I was more capitalising on all the other really good parts about the book. Mm. And I definitely think that the sensory details were absolutely superb, because I could visualise everything so well as I was reading it. But yeah, I was just all in for the traditional horror tropes. I just loved it all. I just could have just read that all day, really.
Yeah, I didn't overthink the Scream thing, because they reference so many different horror books and movies. I didn't really ever compare it to any of them, thinking it was going to sort of copy what happened. I was a little bit more like you, Shelley, in that I was just enjoying the story. And I think all I knew at this point is I knew I did not think it was Mr. Gillies, because his name had been thrown out there so early. I was like, it can't possibly be him. And that was really my only thought. I can say now, at no point in the story did I suspect Saoirse at all. And I wasn't really thinking about Olive as a suspect yet. I was still kind of thinking about the L's, because I'm like, they were mentioned really early on, so they must be important. But I just didn't know. I felt like I needed to know more of what was going on before I could start having a real concrete theory. And just when things couldn't get weirder than your all these horrible dead bodies she's finding, a strange snap, crack, and pop sound starts following Charlie around. And no, it was not a possessed bowl of Rice Krispies. It was ghosts. And the ghosts of two dead girls, they were following Charlie everywhere.
I feel like this book could have got away with a possessed bowl of Rice Krispies, to be fair, and it still would have.
And I would have totally accepted it. I would have been like, yes,
of course. Exactly. She could have just been eating them as she's going. And
Can I just say, I love Rice Krispies.
Oh,
too.
Me too.
It's making me in the mood for them now.
I like them.
Now every time you eat them, you're going to be thinking of poor Hannah and the crab.
It would survive a horror movie.
Yeah. So Olive thinks that Charlie's gone crazy, which again was really believable to me. I was like, it just seems like you would have a best friend who you kind of, you see it all the time when they sort of confide in the friend. The friend's like, yeah, I think you're nuts. And it takes ages for them to convince their friend of what's really going on. So I was totally buying all this. Olive obviously can't see any ghosts. And the school nurse diagnoses Charlie with PTSD since she found both bodies. Again, I thought that was very believable. But it didn't matter how many times Charlie chanted, ghosts are not real, while munching chocolate. The ghosts were very real and relentlessly following her, although they weren't much use, as Hannah only snapped and popped with the occasional crab skittering out of her mouth, and Sarah only made choking noises as these ghosts were frozen in the way they were killed. So they couldn't even help Charlie figure out what happened to them, which kind of added to the comedy value. But not to worry, we weren't done with dead bodies, because Megan Fraser, a theatre major, turned up dead. But this time, this ghost could talk. When she wasn't doing vocal warm-ups. And I just loved Megan's character. I loved when Charlie said she needed coffee and Megan was like, yeah, me too, but her hand kept floating through the coffee mug because she couldn't grab it. I loved her commentary on everything that was going on, just kind of this little annoying voice in Charlie's mind all the time. And of course, there's vocal warm-ups as well. Oh, I just thought she was brilliant. I absolutely loved her. I think she was my favourite character in the whole book. So did you have a favourite ghost? And what did you think about this element of the story of these ghosts following her around?
Yeah, I loved it. The way it sort of, the way the ghosts were introduced for me was really, really creepy. Like, I actually had a bit of a shiver at one point as well. So I liked that because I think you need to have that in a horror story. For me, I would agree with you, Jess. I liked Megan as well. She was probably my favourite character because she just had comedy value down to a D. And I have to say that at this point, when the ghosts came into it, particularly Megan, it reminded me of Jess and Tilly from Totally Deceased.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is like, yeah, this is reminding me of that. So that just brought back to life another book which we've loved on our podcast as well. So yeah, Megan was my favourite character, and I loved how she added a new element, a new dimension to the story, in that she could talk and she could be a little bit more visually aware of what was happening around Charlie. So we knew that that was going to, you know, bring it to the tension to a new level as well as we progress towards the end.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with both of you. I think this was such a funny concept, and I just found myself laughing out loud at the ghost trio throughout the whole of the book. I just thought that was hilarious.
It was like Scrooge as well, wasn't it?
I did question, though, this is another thing that I was questioning there. Why is, and you mentioned that Olive was a bit freaked out and thought Charlie was like losing her mind, but I felt like she really believed her a bit too quickly. And then I was like,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, like, and because she just kind of went along with it. So I would have liked to have had a little bit more of Olive freaking out about this, because we all learn that Olive has something to hide. And if she really did believe Charlie, wouldn't she be thinking, are the ghosts going to be able to tell her something? Why is she not freaking out a bit more?
Yeah.
Is it because she's a complete psychopath? Maybe. And because they can just play it really, really cool. And I guess, I don't even think they get scared or they feel any kind of like freak out at all. They just carry on because they're complete psychopaths. But yeah, the ghosts, they were great. So my favorite one, as well as everyone else, is Megan. Mm-hmm. The others couldn't talk, so they just had like the comedy aspect there of like loud noises going on and the snap, crackle and pop. Yeah. And the choking and everything. And then we had what really made me laugh was Gabrielle when she died, and there was just like a body with no direction there, like she is falling off a cliff and then just appearing again. I just thought it was so funny. It reminded me of BBC Ghosts. Watch it, because that's hilarious. It really reminded me of that.
Oh, okay.
There's so much about this book that I loved, and I, even though I'd read the blurb and I was expecting ghosts, I thought that was going to be like in a scary horror way. They just brought that comedy aspect, and I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, they did. It was really good.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both of you. Like you said, Shelley, it reminded me of Totally Deceased by Sue Cunningham, which we covered last year. And yeah, I thought the ghosts were just such a good way of bringing lighthearted moments to a pretty dark story. And it was just, it was so chaotic. I loved the chaos of the ghosts so much. And I was like you, Arden, I was like cracking up laughing while I was reading it. And they were just so, so good. But if it's not enough that Charlie is getting haunted by ghosts, she is also being followed by the ominous Goldface, who she is convinced is the killer. Unlike Good Girl's Guide to Murder, which we covered for our Christmas special, where we had loads of potential leads, I didn't feel like we had as many here. There was creepy Mr. Gillies, who we've kind of all immediately written off as not a suspect. And I felt like the L's, as I said before, had to be important in some way. I did wonder about Olive a few times, but the reason I was thinking about Olive is I just thought she was the least likely person because she was the best friend, so it'd be like the biggest shock. But I wasn't really picking up on those red flags that you guys were. So I kind of went, all of us sort of floating in the back of my mind, but I was really searching for a different killer. And I couldn't figure out what connected the victims to each other and then what linked them to Charlie. Because I felt like it had to be something to do with Charlie, because she was the one being haunted by the ghost. She was the one being hunted by this Goldface. So it had to be about her. And it was just clear that it was going to be something to do with this past life of hers that we hadn't really discovered what that was yet. And in true YA fashion, things build up to a high school party. I mean, of course it did. And what a perfect opportunity to interview Eden students and Harrogate students while mixing alcohol and loud music and lots of people. The perfect place for Goldface to terrorize Charlie. And as chapter 18 tells us, someone always dies at a high school party. So we had our next victim. your other favourite Arden, Gabrielle, because nothing says high school party like a severed head in a fridge. And just to make things even more infuriating, when Charlie runs to get help and brings people back, the head is no longer there. And finally, Charlie comes up with a suspect list. And on this list, she has Rochelle, Annabelle, Dr. Pruitt, who's the head teacher of the Eden Boys School, Archie, who Rochelle had been seeing for a while, and still Mr. Gillies. We can't shake Mr. Gillies. So you've made it quite clear, Arden, that you had a very set theory from the start. Did that waver at all? Like, or were you like on that the whole way through this book? And Shelley, did you have theories at this point?
I just want to just quickly touch on again about those horror movie rules that you've just said there again, Jess. They was just so much fun, and that severed head in the fridge was absolutely like no exception. It was just hilarious. And then Charlie was standing in this puddle of blood by the fridge. So I had a question at this point. I was like, why didn't she leave footprints everywhere, or even think her shoes could prove Gabrielle was died? Because what had happened here is that the teachers, they just didn't even think that she'd died. They just thought, well, she's just gone missing, or she's just gone out for a little while. And I was just like, okay, why is that? So there was a slight bit of me that was thinking maybe it is to do with them, but I was straight away just ruled that out of my head, because obviously not, because they're adults. It's not going to be the adults. They were acting like this because they needed to protect the establishment rather than anything else. I did kind of suspect Rochelle. I did and didn't. There was I'd say 5% of me that was like, oh, maybe I should be questioning her because of those boots. But then I was like, that's just a red herring, because it's this part of the shower that we'll talk about in a bit. And then we saw Rochelle's boots, and it was like, okay, this is where we are now being led to believe that Rochelle was the killer. But I was still quite set in my theory of it being Olive and Saoirse. I couldn't get my head round why it wouldn't be them. And I knew that the yes on Charlie's necklace was really significant. So then when we learned that it was someone called Sadie in Charlie's previous life, and that Charlie had snitched on her, I was like, oh, maybe she's come back to get revenge. But then I was just like, but we've not seen her at all. I feel like we'd have to have got to know her if it was going to be her. And then I was like, maybe she's had a face change, and maybe she's now Saoirse, or maybe she's now Ollie. I was like, yeah, it might be a bit far-fetched, but we are in a horror film. So anyway, so I knew it had something to do with her.
I love that you jumped to facelift instead of her just wearing the gold mask, which would perfectly hide her face. It would be a much easier
way. Oh, yeah.
To
do that.
That's true.
We went straight to face off.
But that was where I was. I didn't really stray from my initial suspects the whole way through.
I think once Rochelle's boots came into question, I was like, it's definitely not her, because then that is too obvious. I thought the L's from the start and Mr. Gillies were too obvious a choice, even although I wasn't overthinking at the beginning. But I was exactly the same as you, Jess. I was like, there has to be a reason why she's been, by Charlie's being targeted here, something that's going to connect to her past, but we didn't know about her past. And then I was thinking, if it is anybody that's at her school, then how did they know her from the past? So my mind was going into overdrive the last third of the book, trying to figure it all out. And I think that at this point, I felt as if it was a wee bit weird that Charlie was always at the scene of the crime. And that's when I started to suspect Olive. But then I also then came on to the scream theory, because I was like, well, if Olive is there and setting her up for this, there has to be someone else involved, because she can't have done it, because she's there with Charlie every time that this has happened almost. So I started to think there might be another player. But I don't feel like we got to know Saoirse well enough. I think that she could have done with some more screen time. Not a lot more, but a little bit more. And I don't know, I was just dubious about her. I don't feel like she was nice enough to Charlie. I think that Charlie was kind of the one that was more all in there. So I suppose that makes sense when you find out the overall storyline, doesn't it? But yeah, I don't know. I would say Olive was who I was suspecting, but I thought there might be somebody else involved as well at this stage.
Yeah, I did wonder about the head teachers for like a hot minute, kind of like you are. But then it was like immediately when I thought it, I scratched it off, because I was like, why would they do that? I was like, it would ruin their career. It's really risky. Yeah. And I just couldn't see it. So I scratched them off. A demented teacher doing it, like maybe that's quite like teen horror-esque, but again, like Mr.
But why now?
Well, like, right, and Mr. Gillies was just too obvious. He was too good a red herring to not be one, so I was like, nah, it's not gonna be him. And there wasn't really other teachers mentioned that much, so I was definitely leading. I knew it had to be a student, and again, you know, Olive was there in my mind with her link to Charlie, and you just, because she'd be the biggest shock. And again, the L's felt like an obvious choice, but then I thought maybe there's a not obvious motive that would surprise us, and we'll realize that they really aren't bad and they've discovered something they shouldn't have, and the twist will be like, I didn't know maybe it was going to completely turn its head where it's like the twist wouldn't be the shocking who had done it, but it'd be shocking the reason they had done it, and it would make us be like, oh, actually we're on their side, they should have done that. I thought maybe these ghosts are actually horrible people and we just don't know that yet. Maybe they're going to discover that these girls have done a really horrible thing. I don't know, my head was in so many places at this point because I feel like we didn't have a lot of suspects, so it was like trying to figure out how it's going to be done, and I just felt like the L's were so important. We should find out why later, but I was just like, I was like trying to piece together like what part they had to play in this. I didn't have a concrete theory. It was going between Olive and the L's. I wouldn't have really put money on either one, though. I wasn't completely confident. I was just reading and enjoying the ride, and I think the writing was so good and so compelling and so funny. I kept forgetting to try and figure out who the killer was, and I just wanted to know how it was all going to play out. So Olive has the great idea of checking student files in the office for more information on their suspects. There's only one problem. Charlie's file is in there and her secret past life is at risk of being discovered by her best friend. Something she does not want to happen. After all, she had snitched on her last best friend, which resulted in her being arrested and Charlie starting this new life at Harrogate. But after their covert mission to get the files, Charlie's is missing. Dun, dun, dun. Someone's beaten her to it. And then she gets the mysterious note from the person with the files saying that they have it and to meet them in the friary, which just sounds so terrifying. So was someone just messing around with Charlie? Was it Goldface retaliating because Charlie was trying to solve the murder? Or was there something incriminating in that file? What were you thinking?
Well, at this point, it just confirmed my theory that Goldface was targeting Charlie, which we'd all obviously suspected at this point anyway, and that it was all to do with this incident that had happened before she started school at Harrogate. So because I didn't know the full story behind it, I was mostly just looking forward to finding out. So I wasn't overthinking anything again at this point. I was just excited to see what the end game was. I still was unsure at this point of who maybe the additional killer could be.
Do you know what? This bit confused me a little bit. I thought, and I think this is right, and so let me know if I'm wrong, but I think it was Rochelle who stole the file.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah,
not because she's the killer. Like, and I wasn't thinking this then, but just because she's awful and she just wants to bully and control Charlie. And then when Charlie went down to that scary friary, I mean, is there anything more scary than a boarding school anyway? Like, you know something bad's going to happen.
What is a friary?
I have no idea. I probably should have looked it up. I feel like it's some kind of...
It sounds very monkey to me, like somewhere monks would have you.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a religious place, I think.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I think so. So when Charlie went down to the friary, I was expecting her to come face to face with Rochelle and not the gold mask killer at this point. I thought in a way we was being led to thinking that the killer had the files. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, so she thinks she's going to come face to face with the killer. But then I was like, no, it's not going to be that. So, and so like I said, I'm not totally sure what happened. I think I might be on the right track because Charlie did come face to face with Rochelle when she was running away from the killer and like just smashed into her like she just does a lot. So I was like, the killer or killers at this point are just following Charlie's every movement. And simply Rochelle was just there just to meet Charlie and get her into trouble. And she had something against her, which was a file, and she could have used that for her benefit, which is where I was at this point.
Yeah, so I think this was another red herring because the killers already knew about Charlie's past. Charlie just didn't know that they knew that. So they had no need for the file. So I think you're right, it was Rochelle who stole it.
Yeah.
And I think this was just to lead us to think that Rochelle was the killer. Yeah, definitely agree with that. And it worked. Well, it worked maybe a little bit for me. Like, I probably put a little bit of doubt in my mind about whether or not it was Rochelle. But again, it just all seemed too obvious too early on. And I was like, no, we've still got a lot of book to go. So a lot more is going to happen here. And then, of course, one of the best parts of this book is all the references to the horror genre that we've kind of talked about before. We have some classic horror tropes. I mean, we have school dances, we have high school parties, we have the freaky mask that keeps following Charlie around, the creepy teachers, the preppy high school populars. But my personal favorite was the shower room scene where Charlie is hiding in one of the shower cubicles and the killer is going along each cubicle one by one, whipping back each shower curtain and moving closer and closer to where Charlie is hiding. And I just loved the tension. And like those kind of scenes, they always make you like, it's like your insides all just like I don't even know, like not up in your stomach. And I was at the edge of my seat and I was desperate to find out how she was going to get out of it, because I knew she was going to get out of it, but I couldn't see how she was going to get out of it. And yeah, I just loved it. It was nail-biting, edge of your seat entertainment. So did you guys have any favorite horror moments in this book?
Mine was exactly the same. It was definitely the shower scene, like the dragging of the hacksaw and like the whipping back of each curtain, and that it was getting closer and closer to Charlie. There was so much tension, and just it just brought so many horror films to like the forefront. I was just like, this is awful. And I could just imagine the way she was just sort of standing there in the corner, just hoping the killer was not going to come to her. But I loved how she got out of it as well. I loved that she like slid out from underneath the cubicles to escape. And then, like, she just, this was another comedy horror bit of the story. Like, she ran up behind the killer, pulled them back with a towel. I was just, it was just insane. I was like, what are you doing? Why can't you just run off? Because, oh, I suppose the door was in front. So you had to pull the killer down and then just run off. It was funny, but it was also so freaky. And on top of that, she was just then naked, running through the halls. And no one even batted an eyelid, really. Like, even when she just ran into Rochelle, she was like, oh, why are you naked? Like, there was no, what's going on? Are you okay? It was just like, oh, okay, you're naked. it was just so funny. Another bit that I loved was the ending, and it was because it was another horror trope. It was where everything is explained, that typical horror reveal moment. And again, I was like, this is just so Scream. It was just so great to learn why the killers were out for revenge. And it was also really great to feel like I got something right for a change.
We go Arden, woohoo!
Woo! Makes a change. I never get this right.
Yeah, oh my goodness, I'm going to just sound like a broken record now, but absolutely 100% my favourite scene was definitely the shower scene. Again, I tabbed that as well when I was reading, and I felt like I could feel my clenched jaw as I was reading it. And I love it whenever you watch any kind of movie and you're like, oh my goodness, it's like Jamie Lee Curtis hiding in the cupboard, and you know that Michael Myers is coming right at her, and you're like, how on earth is she going to get out of this one? And that you had that moment in this book, so it's perfection. Total classic horror trope. And yeah, very sort of silly. Again, Scream had the very silly side to it as well. It was almost like the killers kept falling down and all the rest of it. So I loved the comedy element, which was perfect balance, I found, in this story. And I think the other part that I really liked, I did love the severed head in the fridge. I thought that was brilliant as well. I just think, yeah, it was just everything about it was exactly what I would love in terms of a horror book. But yeah, the shower scene was definitely nail-biting tension. And I really, really thoroughly enjoyed that.
It really, really was. So you mentioned the end a little bit in your answer, Arden. So let's talk about the end. We have another death, which is Rochelle this time. And I really did love Rochelle's character. She was a very close second to Megan for me, because she brought so much comedy to the story. You mentioned this. I had this tag to like mention as well, Arden, but I loved all the run-ins Charlie had with her. She just seemed to like constantly be running into this girl, like physically running into her and falling over. And it's just the reaction from Rochelle every time. And that one where it's like, Charlie, why are you here? And why are you naked? She's like, what is going on? But she was so like deadpan about everything. And I just loved their banter. She was the perfect frenemy for this story. But now Rochelle's dead and Saoirse is in danger. So weirdly, I still did not suspect Saoirse at this point. I was kind of like, all right, well, it's definitely not Rochelle. And I was still thinking, okay, it's going to be Olive. It's going to be Olive. So Charlie needs to save her love interest. And I think going back to what you said, Shelley, it was the lack of page time for Saoirse that made me not suspect her. Because I thought if she's as important a character as the killer, then we're going to be seeing a lot more of her. And that's kind of what my thinking was and why I didn't suspect her. But here is poor Charlie running to save her love interest. And Charlie is starting to suspect her best friend, Olive. I mean, who else would plan all these perfect horror moments all surrounding Charlie? And Saoirse's leaning hard into this narrative too. When Charlie brings this up, Saoirse's like, yeah, that sounds right. So just a side note, I love how chaotic the climax of this book is with the ghost, Mr. Gilly's severed ghost hand running around all the rocks and the water filling up in the cave and like this kind of ticking time bomb with that. And then the ghosts all like giving their commentary. You've got Rochelle now who's talking to, and it was just so much going on. I loved it. It was kind of this moment when I stopped suspecting Olive. I think maybe about a third of the way, and I started suspecting her heavily. And then at this moment, I stopped suspecting her because Charlie suspected her. And I was like, there's still quite a bit of book to go. So I was like, all this time they've been leading us up to Olive, and if you're going to find out it's not her. And I just thought there must be a really big twist coming, which there was, but I was wrong about everything. But just when Charlie thinks she's in the classic overshare moment, when two love interests are in a life-threatening situation and they confess their secret feelings for each other, she realizes that Saoirse isn't building up to an epic kiss scene. She's only the bloody killer. I mean, shock for me, not shock for Arden or Shelley, but I was just like, what? I just want to say, I love that this book gave us those classic tropes, all these horror cliches, all these moments we know and love, and they laid it all out for us, but they still managed to make me doubt myself and surprise me. And I just think it's the perfect book for a horror fan because Scarlett sticks to the horror method, and it's kind of like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I feel like she's pulled all the best parts from horror films and horror stories to make this book. And sometimes books try and break the mold so much and they go so far out of what their genre's mold is that it just doesn't really work. And people who love that genre end up not loving it. So I think it was clever how Scarlett wrote this and how she sort of stuck to the tried and true storylines, but weaved in enough to make us doubt it and still throw in little twists and turns and surprises. We find out Saoirse's motive and then the pieces start to fall into place. Of course, it was Charlie's past. And we learn that Charlie, you know, fell for this girl, Sadie. And when she got into trouble, Charlie was a snitch and snitched on Sadie, and Sadie ended up in prison. But what Charlie didn't know is that Sadie ended up taking her life 2 months into prison. And this part confused me a little bit. So Saoirse and Olive also knew Sadie, but didn't know Charlie before Charlie coming. Like, that part kind of confused me a little bit. If, like, was Sadie at Harrogate originally and then she went, left Harrogate and ended up where Charlie was? You probably have it all figured out. But that bit kind of confused me a little bit. But Saoirse was also in love with Sadie, and so she blamed Charlie for Sadie's death. And this whole thing was just about enacting revenge and retaliating against Charlie for snitching on Sadie. And with a particularly comedic commentary from the ghost, Charlie manages to escape and find Olive, and together they fight off Saoirse, who falls to her death. But it was never going to be that easy. And then came our second twist. Olive was involved all along and literally and metaphorically stabbed Charlie in the back. So what did you make with our ending, with all of its twists and turns, or not twists and turns for Arden, because you already had it figured out in chapter one? What did you guys make of all of this?
Yeah, I was quite, I feel as if there was a lot going on at the end, but exactly the way that you would expect in a classic horror movie, and this is the horror book version. I was like, yeah, I could see this being a film. And I just thought, like, up to this point, it was like all of the death scenes were so epic, weren't they? They were like so well described, and you were just like, again, you could visualize everything, see it all playing out the way that, exactly the same way that you would in a movie. And at the end, I had already put together the fact that it was Saoirse and Olive, but I just didn't know why. I was constantly trying to join the dots. So when we find out that obviously there was the previous love interest and that's what connected the story together, it was like the penny drop, and I was like, ah, right, well, that's really good, actually, that makes sense. But I was a bit confused as well, like you, Jess. I wasn't sure. I felt as if maybe a little bit more explanation could have been worked in there to how Sadie connected to these other two characters. So you weren't alone in that one either. I would have liked it more. I've always liked more of a book that I've enjoyed. But yeah, I was really satisfied with the ending. And I thought it had great twists and turns and such a good build up to that point as well.
Yeah, me too. I feel like you've said, Jess, I knew where this book was going from the off. But I just, like I said, I think it's only because I was so obsessed with Scream. I think actually, from answering what you just said and what the confusion is, and I don't think we did get a full explanation, but I did read the book so quickly, maybe I've missed it. So by the sounds of things, I think Sadie went to Harrogate. And she was obviously really bullied by the elves there as well, which is why they got revenge on the elves. So she'd obviously gone there and she'd had a relationship with Saoirse. She was Olive's best friend, I think.
Oh, that's right. They did say that, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's how they all know each other. And then obviously maybe due to the bullying, she left there and then went and met Charlie. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think I've just, because I was probably the one to read it a bit further back, I think I've just forgotten that part when I've been coming to do this part of the questions, because I just couldn't remember that part in my mind.
It's just such a wild coincidence, though, the fact that she would go to the exact town that Charlie lived in, meet Charlie, befriend her, and then Charlie would go to the exact boarding school that she had gone to.
Yeah, but then it wouldn't be the book, would it? You know, it had to be that.
And it's like Charlie must not have known that she went to Harrogate.
No, like, I suppose it must have been like pictures or something, maybe, like around the school. She would have gone, oh, look, oh, that's Sadie.
Or does Sadie never say, like, I used to go to the school and people were horrible? Maybe she didn't. Maybe it was so traumatizing she didn't mention it.
I think it could have done with a bit more explaining. But overall, I just loved reading this book. And although I knew what was going on, and I was certain what was going on, I didn't know. Obviously, I could have been wrong. I was still totally expecting it. But this book did make me jump out of my skin while I was reading it. I think it was just written really, really well. And that bit at the end, like, although I knew that Olive was going to do something, I wasn't expecting her to stab her in the back like that. So that really made me jump out of my skin, and I just really, as awful as it is, I just thought it was a really good moment. And I was just like, oh no, don't die. But it's like, obviously she's not gonna die, she's the main character, they never die. Overall, I love this book. I love the extra plot twist at the end, and I really loved the bit when Charlie went back home with her mum, stepped into her room, and there, written on the mirror with thick blood red lipstick, Happy Slasher Saturday. That was so cool. Class. I was like, we're so in for book two. We're in for a sequel.
Love a sequel.
Yeah, it comes out this year.
This year.
That's exciting. Yeah, I'm sure they just announced it a couple of weeks
Can't
ago.
Can't wait. I would definitely be reading it.
So exciting. So what a great book to start the new year. I really enjoyed reading it and chatting with you guys about it. As always, we would love to hear your thoughts, listeners. We are constantly looking for people to talk to us about books. I mean, we love talking to each other, but the more the merrier. So do feel free to tell us, you know, what your thoughts are. Send us a comment or a DM and let us know. Did you enjoy the story? What were some of your favourite moments? We'd love to hear from you. So next month is Arden's Choice. So do you have a tease for us for February's Choice?
I do. And it's time for something completely different. Well, it is the month of love after all. So next month, we'll be reading along with one of the most prolific romance authors as we head into a whole new game. And this time it won't involve any murder, unless you think killing a king isn't murder.
Intrigued. This has been YA Book Jam with JL Blakely,
Arden Jones,
and Shirley Mack.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to like and subscribe where you listen. You can follow us on Instagram and X at YA_bookjam and on Substack at YA Book Jam Podcast. If you are a publisher and have books coming out this year that you think would be interested in, you can email us at YABookjampodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow Shelley on Instagram, X, BlueSky, and TikTok at Shelley MacBook.
Watch Arden interview authors and illustrators, check out Kidlit Live on YouTube, and follow on Instagram at Kidlit Live. You can also follow Arden on X, BlueSky, and Instagram at Arden Eliza Jones.
And you can follow Jess on Instagram, BlueSky, and TikTok at JL Blakely.